that a proper approach to marriage is extremely important. And we do try to help guide and counsel young people into a kind of a happy married situation, and particularly during the early days, either before the Lord leads someone their way or during those days, in order to avoid leaving a trail of broken hearts behind them. I don't think it's necessary to sample the crowd to try to find out which one is the one for Christians. I believe that if we yield to the Spirit of God, that we have a shortcut. We have some inside information. And that He will spare us a lot of heartaches. And will spare us leaving behind us people whose hearts have been diverted from the Lord and broken hearts just by this, trying this and going this one for a while and that one and the next one. But marriage, I'm certain that we'll all agree, brings the deepest and the broadest satisfaction that can come to us next to our personal relationship with God. And since God invented the idea, He thought it up, He is certainly interested in that we might enjoy what He has provided to the full. And I'm certain that He knows how to regulate it for our greatest joy. Don't you think so? But you know, I'm amazed to find, particularly the young Christians, not young couples necessarily, but couples who are young Christians, that they are afraid of finding out what God has to say about how married life should be ordered. And the reason that they are afraid is something like the little boy I mentioned, who, when they ask him what God does all day, he says, well, God just goes around looking for people who are having a good time and then making them stop it. And somehow or other, we're afraid of the will of God. That it's going to take the joy out of our lives. It's going to rob us of something. Or that God is going to put us in a bind or in a corner. And that we're just going to be tight. When the facts are that the will of God is good, acceptable, and perfect. It's good, acceptable, and perfect. And these things are for our good. God intends that we should drink of the river of His pleasure. But I don't know why it is that there is a fear, some way, that if God's word about it and God's will on the matter is going to rob us of something. One thing we need to keep in mind, and it's amazing, even older married people, that men and women are just plain different. Not only physically different, but we're made up differently psychologically. We have to tell our fellows in the work, and we have talked with men, and to put it this way, that women are not men with skirts on. And that you don't treat women as though they were men. They're just made up differently. And the same goes for men. I remember one girl that was talked to about very immodest, well, not very, but dresses that weren't the most modest. And the point that was made, the men have difficulty as far as their eyes are concerned. Well, that's their hard luck. And couldn't figure out how come men were different. I can give you an illustration of how they're different. For instance, if you come up to a man and you say, well, where'd you get that suit? Oh, I got it down here at Desmond's. You come up to a lady and you say, oh, where'd you get that dress? Why, what's the matter with it? Our reactions are just plain different, that's all. And the Lord knows how we're strung together, how these wires are all hooked up here. And so therefore He knows how best that we should be related to one another in this most wonderful of all relationships. So we know that when we follow what he has in mind, it's going to make for the greatest happiness, the deepest satisfaction. And as we said the other night, the closer we are to the Lord, the closer we'll be to one another as man and wife. Well, I'm going to stick my neck way out. And I'm going to talk first of all about a husband's responsibilities in a home. And Ma's listening. They say, why do you call her Ma? Well, I say she earned her M.A. Now I want to talk about a wife's responsibilities in this marriage relationship. And then if things aren't too warm, well, I'll make a few suggestions and then duck out. But I'd like us to turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Beginning with verse 22. This might have been read at your wedding, but you were probably too nervous to hear it. So, good time to read it again. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. We are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. I'd like to speak, first of all, relative to the husband's responsibility. And as it points out here so clearly, uppermost, the husband's responsibility to his wife is to love her. To love her. How? As his own body. Now, a man certainly manages to take care of himself and look out for himself and take in due consideration for himself and nourish and cherish. And that's how much that we are to love our wives, or so much to be willing to lay down our lives for them. But you know, it's a lot easier to talk about laying down our lives for them than maybe just to live for them thoughtfully, day by day. A preacher's wife once said to Dawson, she said, when I hear my husband preach on Sunday morning, I can't believe that it's the same man I live with at home. You know, I feel, I have no statistics, that the majority of married couples have never learned or never really experienced the true happiness of married life. that in more cases than not, that even when on the outside everything seems okay, and if you went over to their home and spent an evening, yet you'd be surprised what would take place in that home after you left. All the way from the arguing, the bickering, to bestiality. And plain, ordinary, everyday lust of the flesh. By the way, I'll tell young people, our gang, as we talk with them, you know, if you have problems before you're married, sexually, getting married won't solve them. You must have victory in your heart and your mind. And you only have to read 1 Thessalonians 3, where Paul instructs us to treat our wives in holiness and in purity. We're to love them. To love them. Love expresses itself not in indulgence, but love expresses itself how? In sacrifice. In sacrifice. In self-denial. In putting the other person first. In consideration. And that's the next point. Consideration. 1 Peter 3:7. We are to treat our wives with consideration. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge. And that word means with intelligent consideration. With intelligent consideration. Or giving deference to, which means giving courteous regard for her wishes. That's what it means. 1 Peter 3:7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, that is, with intelligent consideration, giving courteous regard for her wishes. I remember one time Dawson was asked about a certain move that they were to make, and he said to this young fellow who was approaching, he said, well, I want to talk to Lila first. So what's the matter? Don't you run your house? I have seen married couples where apparently the young husband thought himself or he acted like a despot, a little dictator, and that he intended that when he said to his wife, jump, she should have only one answer, and that is how high. I remember one fellow that wanted to represent us overseas. And we were planning on his going. And then, meantime, he was married. And we had opportunity to observe the situation in his married life. And apparently he had the idea, the mistaken idea, that to be the head of the home meant that she was to shut up and take orders and like it. Which showed there was something wrong down here, and something wrong with his outlook. So we said to him, no, I don't think you could represent us overseas. At least not now. We'd like to keep you around the States for a while and see if this situation can't be corrected. Then you can go overseas. We didn't like it at all. He said, well, I have discovered if you don't make up your mind to get to the mission field, you won't get there. So if you won't promise to send in a year, I won't go. I'll go elsewhere. Say, well, we couldn't promise to send you in a year because we don't know what the Lord's meaning would be in a year from now. Said, all right. So he left. 10 years ago. He's not in the field yet. There was a situation where it looked like that he just had a slave. Well, here it says that we are to give wise consideration, courteous regard for her wishes. And then giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. Giving honor. You know, I like to see it when a man goes out of his way just to give honor to his wife. You don't see a great deal of it. I don't mean this in this kind of loud talk, and it's like it says in Ecclesiastes, no vanity. Vanity, all is vanity, says the preacher. That someone said that could be translated soap bubbles, you know. We call them a blowhard. I don't mean that. But I mean sincere recognition and appreciation, giving honor to a man's wife. For him to do it, for his wife. That's what we're talking about here. As unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of God, to what end? That your prayers be not hindered. That your prayers be not hindered. Well, that'll hinder your prayers if we violate what it's talking about here. And then there's Colossians 3:19. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Love your wives and be not bitter against them. Have you experienced, as I have, the embarrassment of being with another couple and hear the man bawl her out, criticize her in front of you, riding along in the car and have a squabble over something? That hurts you down here, doesn't it? So, be not bitter against them. Then, of course, a man is to provide for his own household. 1 Timothy 5:8. 1 Timothy 5:8. And I'm certain that that goes without saying. The man provide not for his own household, he's worse than an infidel. Then a man, the husband, is to provide the spiritual leadership for the home. And here is where it seems that more husbands than not have abdicated. They are guilty of sheer irresponsibility when it comes to taking the spiritual leadership in the home. And you can go all the way through the Bible from beginning to end, and you know that God intended that the man should take the spiritual leadership in the home. Now, I know I've heard criticism of some wives because they said, well, they're kind of usurping the man's place. No, they weren't. Somebody had to pick up the loose ends and carry on with it. The man certainly wasn't. And as I've suggested to some, I said, if you quit worrying about a woman taking your place and get busy and get yourself spiritually qualified for leadership, you'd be a whole lot better off. And then she won't have to be picking up some of the loose ends that you're leaving dangling. I think that some of us men, we just need to face up to our responsibilities, that's all. Say, well, I work, I'm busy, so on, I provide for the household. Are you providing spiritually? And I would say that probably the greatest reason for not providing spiritually is that our own life is defeated. We're not having consistent time with the Lord. Or we may want to, but we have so fouled things up in some of our personal relationships around the home that it's going to take a good deal of straightening out and embarrassing humiliation to do so. That we just don't want to go through with it. But that's a responsibility. Genesis 18:19. I read it to you the other night. I think it's 18:19. Yes. God speaking of Abraham, he says, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." We're to take the spiritual leadership in the home. Now, I do know that there's the other extreme. And I'll have a word to say to the wives in a moment about this. But we can take the extreme. I've seen it where a man gets down to business for the Lord and he tries to push his wife along and she resists. And there's trouble. And it goes on for a year, 2 years, and she just isn't going to come along. And but you see, one thing that happens, I think, that we fail to realize that the first step is to live the kind of a life that a husband ought to live. And then the time will come for our opportunity to seek to help her spiritually. You know, it's like going on a diet. After I've been successful for one day on a diet, then the next day I start preaching to my wife. Bob Boardman was suggesting that maybe some of us ought to walk around the glen a little bit more. It'd be good instead of just hopping in the car. So I told him, I agreed with him. I said, just this noon, I came out of the pink house and I had a momentary debate whether I should jump in the car and drive to the office or whether I should walk over. And I got the victory and I walked over. So as I came up to the office and I saw all the cars sitting there, I thought, man, I wonder how come these people all brought their cars. You know? It isn't amazing, but I'm afraid we're like that. We just begin to get started and we start, well, I don't know how come they're not doing like I'm doing. Boy, look at me. I walk. So we push too fast. And we need to be careful there. Another thing, the father's responsibility is to discipline the children. And there again, I'm afraid, men, that we're guilty of abdicating oftentimes and shirking our responsibility. Because you read through Proverbs, who's to discipline the children? The father. Who's to bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord? Well, it's the father. Another suggestion I'd like to make, and I don't know if there may be some scripture on this, but I don't have it, and it's to teach your wife to be a widow. Oh, I guess my reference on this is the Reader's Digest of a few years ago. But I remember that when we first married, and that Lucille, I'd have to phone the doctor to make her appointments for her. She couldn't hardly do a thing. It's hard to drive. Well, I read this article, and I don't know how much influence that had at the time, but I know this, that in the last 7 years, she's had to manage the money, manage the household, the kids, and the whole thing. And the article's point was that we can let our wife be so dependent upon us, we make all the decisions, we handle the whole business, so that if something happened to us and we died, she'd be completely lost. And you know, don't get scared, but there are 7,700,000 widows in America because women just live longer than men. And I think it's worth thinking of. And furthermore, if the Lord should call you off somewhere for a ministry, well, I think that we have a responsibility to, well, if you want to put it so bluntly, teach him to be a widow, to know how to handle some of the affairs. I'm not saying that you should take your hands off. I mean, I'm not telling you what to do in your house. This is a general principle. Then something else we need to remember, men, and particularly if you're among those who who are gone quite a bit and you work a lot at night. You know, for us, our work is, I mean, that's our life. We get out, we've got our business contacts, and there's this and that and the other. But really, when it comes down to it, for the wife who stays at home, you, her husband, are really her life. And consequently, you owe that wife of yours some time. I remember when I first went to Seattle, Washington, to take over the navigator's work, and Harold Christman came up to visit us. And I was going, leaving home at 8 in the morning, get home at 11 at night, 7 days a week. And he sat me down one day and he said, "Now listen, do you have a responsibility to your wife?" "Yeah." "Do you spend any time with her?" "Well, breakfast table." And he gave me quite a little lecture. And he said, "You know what you ought to do? You ought to set aside one night a week for your family. And then arrange for a sitter, and when the time for the kids to go to bed, well, you take your wife out on a date." Well, we haven't always followed it, but we've tried to. A man has a responsibility to his wife. And I know that when I was very concerned about leaving for 6 months for Europe, and I was talking with Doss about this in Detroit one morning about 5:45, we were heading out for an early morning class. And I was concerned about leaving Lucille and the children for 6 months. He said, "Now don't forget, as you're getting you're preparing to leave, that your wife will be carrying the responsibility of the finances, of the discipline, the problems that come up. And as important as it is that your children get your time, it's more important, really, that you and Lucille have time to talk and to pray about the family responsibilities." And I'm convicted over that personally. I know that's the case. Some of your men will have a business. You'll have business assistants, maybe. And you'll see them every day, and they can come to you about their business problems and about the things in their department. But the wife who is your assistant has a hard time even getting a half hour, an hour a week. And I know how it is. I go home at night, frankly, I'm beat. And I have said to Lucia, "Well, you can keep talking if you want, but I'm going to sleep." Or, "I'm concerned about who we're going to send to Europe and some big problem we've got, and she's interested in what she's going to wear for the dinner tomorrow night, and I can't see much importance in what she's going to wear for that dinner as compared to the thing that's really important and I'm thinking about." And then, "Well, Danny, who are you? And you're not that important. That business is not that important. It won't hurt you to get interested in whether or not they're wearing pointed toes or round ones. I wouldn't know." "I wouldn't know." And some of these other deals, I can't. All I can say is, "Hon, just hang on to it. It'll be back in the house." But I don't know. Lucy's listening. She'll know what I mean. I think, well, okay, listen. It's important. Listen. And who does she have to talk to? Now, my wife would have more opportunity, of course, to talk with people than some of your wives because we live in this kind of a situation. But for a wife at home, it can be a lonely thing. And who does she have to talk to? So we ought to listen. You know, and it's like coming home. I love my kids. And when I come home from a trip, I'm just eager to see them. But I'm usually tired. And then they also want to tell me all in 30 minutes all that happened all the while I was gone. Maybe that was 2 months. So I have finally learned to pray and to steel myself for the situation. And I also have learned this. Unless somebody follows me home to get some decision out of me, but if I go home, with the kids, that's it. I'm not going to try to think about who ought to go to Europe and listen to what Cherry was doing in Bible school this morning at the same time. Bible school is the most interesting and important thing in the world at the time. Well, that's on kids. But I think on our wife that we need to remember that, men, and be a real thoughtful, considerate sweetheart. You know, I don't think you need to lose that old sweetheart love. You? I know I'm getting kind of gray-haired, and for Ma and me, it's been 15 years. But I tell you, love in itself, being sweethearts, is more thrilling than it's ever been. And I'm sure that you experienced the same. As I studied the scripture on the subject of a husband's responsibility to a wife, and I have never studied the scriptures in any exhaustive way at all on the wife's responsibility to the husband, so I have a few suggestions. But as far as the man's concerned, it seems to me that five words pretty well sums it up. Love, that's first. To love. Secondly, gentleness. Esteem them, and satisfaction. God has told us to be satisfied with our wives. All right, now a little bit to the ladies, and I'll have to do this in a meek and quiet spirit. Wife's responsibility in the home. Well, first of all, is to love her husband, Titus 2:4. And I know what you thought I was going to say, first of all, too. But I fooled you. That's my second point. That they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers in home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. They are to love their husbands. Secondly, they are to be submissive to their husbands, or obedient to their husbands, as long as the husband is right. And also just in a certain segment of things. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. In everything. Now, I know that's hard to swallow. Real hard to swallow. But it's there. This is God's idea, not mine. But you know that man by nature, men, that is, human beings by nature, seek to be independent of God, right? But men are only happy as they are dependent upon God. True? A woman by nature wants to be independent of her husband. That's the nature, the natural thing to do. But God has so constituted them that they're only happy when dependent. And the gal that gets her way is neither happy with it or with the man who gave it to her. Quote Ephesians 5, Reader's Digest, anything else you want. And the thing of it is, it's hard to say, yeah, but what if he's wrong, after all? He's not all-knowing. I mean, I've got a brain in my head. I can think a few things, too. In fact, because right down to it, I'm a little quicker than he is. Well, that may be true. Maybe true. So he needs you. But looky here. Suppose you're not even saved. Now, if you want something to swallow that's a little rough, okay, listen to this one. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the manner of life of the wife. Well, that's the position that a Christian wife is to take if she's got an unsaved husband. And of course it's difficult. But you see, that's what makes the difference. The grace of God is manifested where? In difficult situations. Why, if everything was going lovely, how could the grace of God be manifested to people about? I love this illustration. I heard a man point it out. You remember Moses and the burning bush? Here Moses was walking along the wilderness one day, and here he stopped. He saw something. There was a bush on fire. Anything unusual about a bush being on fire? No. He probably seen a lot of bushes on fire. But there was something unusual about this bush, and what was that? It wasn't being burned up. You look around today and you see people in trouble, difficult situations. That isn't unusual. To be on fire with fiery trials. But what is unusual? When they're not consumed by them. When underneath there's a quiet assurance, joy, and a peace. And you remember when Moses saw that bush on fire that wasn't being consumed, he turned off his side to see what it was all about, and God spoke to him out of the bush. And the same thing happens today. People are in difficult circumstances. They're not being consumed. People say, well, hey, there's something different. I hadn't seen it like that before. And they want to see what this is all about. And just as God spoke to Moses out of the bush that was on fire, so today God often speaks to people who turn aside to the very one that's in trial and in difficulty. I think that Lila Trotman is an outstanding example of that very thing. In his last couple years, before Mr. Trotman died, she was in bed over here in her bedroom in the Pink House for 9 months with TB. During that time, had a major operation. Of course, they have that dyspastic child that's in an institution. And then her husband. And countless people have been blessed and comforted and encouraged by something they couldn't understand about her life. The doctor said, somebody asked the doctor, is she in state of shock? Well, if so, she's been so for 2 years. But it's still the same. No. The grace of God in difficult situations. Now, really, what it comes to this, and it's so close to home, because this is home, that we have a hard time to see that the God of the universe, the God of all circumstances, is not going to let you suffer more than you're able. He isn't going to turn his back and let you go through something that he didn't see. God will undertake for you. If you fulfill your part, he'll take care of his. And so basically, I would say that a wife's submission to her husband is basically rooted in her submission to Christ. I think that's where the root of it really is. Now, I talked to husbands a moment ago about consideration for her wishes. It doesn't mean that she just walks around and never opens her mouth. But it seems to me that certainly, at least I would, consult. And after due consideration, but some one person has to make the final decision. And that's the responsibility of the head of the house. And, of course, the responsibility for the outcome is also his. Well, quickly here. a meek and a quiet spirit. Not loud-mouthed. Yelling at her husband. But a meek and a quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. That's what it talks about in 1 Peter, first chapter, or third chapter. But let it be the hidden man of the heart. Well, let me go on. Talking about wives here with unsaved husbands particularly. While they behold their chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is, in the sight of God, of great price. Then, I'd like to suggest that a wife's first responsibility is not to minister in the lives of gals, to have an outside ministry, quote, but her first responsibility is to her husband, to her children, and to her home. My wife's first responsibility is not to speak, to do this, that, and the other. Her first responsibility is to her family and to her home. And unless she takes care of that responsibility, she will not have earned a right to have a ministry outside the home. Because if I understand it right, here's what it says. The aged women, or the older women likewise, if they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to do what? To be sober, to love their husbands, to love the children, their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers of home, good, obedient to their own husbands. See, they, having gone through it and done it, and they can teach the younger women to do the same. Now, I believe that God will give a girl a ministry outside her home, here and there. I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but I've also found how God can bring that ministry right to the home, and I'm certain you've seen it as well. Well, let me just make a few suggestions here. That's enough on that. Maybe we could have a little round table. That would really be interesting, wouldn't it, on some of these. It would be wonderful if you all could have a little round table discussion on that. Some suggestions. First of all, never let the sun go down on your imaginations. Never let the sun go down on your imaginations. If you think that something was said or something bothers you, try to make it a habit of your life not to go to sleep without getting it straight first. And I think it's only fair to say that you gals will have to work on that the hardest, because it's a little harder for women to come out with things, generally speaking, than it is for men. Now, we've got our problems then in other lines that you don't. But whatever you do, talk it over, get it out, straighten it up, pray it over, and be sure that when you go to sleep, you have a conscience void of offense toward God and one another. And men, it's a manly thing to do, and certainly a Christian thing to do, to ask your wife's forgiveness when you should do it, when you owe it to her. I know some are afraid that, well, if I ask forgiveness, that lowers me. It lowers us not to. Confession to one another. And by the way, you know the easiest thing to do? Yes, well, I'm sorry that I did so-and-so, but you did so-and-so. Yes, I know, but well, what you did to me, well, what you said. No, I believe that we have an individual responsibility before God to make our part right, whether the other person responds or not. Don't you? And then to leave it there. Point number two is don't wilt. You know, it's easy. Come home. Wife's had the kids all day. And we're tired. Just not want to pitch in. But let's give a hand with the kids when we get home. And wife, don't drop. You know, everything seems to be going along pretty well until the husband comes up to the door, and then all of a sudden he just wilts. Oh, man, it's been a terrible day. The kids, oh, you don't know. Well, I tell you, just a cheery word and the wife just to freshen up a little bit before her husband comes home. Boy, that makes a big difference. And I just like to give this little testimony that to Lucy, Lucille. I only remember twice in the last 7 years when I've called her or gotten a letter from her that she was other than cheery and encouraging. I tell you, that means a lot. There's none of this, oh, it's just so hard at home. When are you coming home? What can you do when you're 3,000 miles away anyhow? And you got another 6 weeks to stick it out. Well, there's a cheery word, encouraging word, always. Boy, what it means. I tell you, you thank God for a help meeting like that. Third is unity. You ought to agree on your principles of operation in the private of your own bedroom, and don't disagree in front of the kids or the company or anybody else. Let's get together, decide on your method of operation, particularly with the kids, so that you're together, and so you don't disagree on your discipline and so on in front of the children. For your conversation, get some time to talk. And I think this is where we husbands are going to have to work on it the hardest, just to see to it that we do it. And then consideration. Consideration. Don't criticize one another before others. And real and courtesy. You know, it's amazing. I have seen people, couples, who they're more courteous to other people than they are to their partner. It's amazing. I know one, here they sit in the car, and they're going on a trip, see, and the wife loads the car. Well, you think he was raised in Africa, the Orient, you know, where they, well, the women do it. I was amazed all on this trip to see road gangs, road builders, women. And the men sitting over there trying to figure out ways to get them to work harder. By the way, it's where Christianity has gone. You know that the place of the women has been brought up to where it ought to be. Okay. Few suggestions. Nothing new, I'm sure. But we just need to prayerfully meditate. And I'd like to just exhort you once more. You have 2 days left here. And it's a wonderful time just to meditate and think through on the way you spend your time with your family or don't spend it. And then put it down specifically in black and white what you plan to do to correct them, these situations, when you get home.